6639594. That's 6639594. Or stop in for great food and great atmosphere and a great staff. They're on the air because they care and are wishing everyone a safe, happy, and healthy holiday season. Have a party, wedding, graduation, summer reunion, backyard birthday, or a backyard get-together to plan? Well, make sure that occasion is extra special and find all of your party needs at Grand Rental Station. Don't go anywhere else for your canopies, chairs, tables, bounce houses, and dunk tanks. Grand Rental Station has it all. When planning your next event, be sure to add Grand Rental Station staff of expert consultants to your list for the very best in service and advice. Call your local Grand Rental Station now at 970-532-0144 in Johnstown. The very place for everything to rent. That's Grand Rental Station, 970-532-0144.
We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution.
The Brush Housing Authority in Brush reminds listeners to spend more time with an elderly member of our community. What better way to show you care than to remember a family member, friend, or neighbor? Checking on their welfare, making a phone call, or a simple visit can make all the difference in the quality of their life. This message was courtesy of the folks who care at Brush Housing Authority, who say our area is a great place to live, work, and raise our families, and they're doing their part to keep it that way. That's the Brush Housing Authority. For more information on programs, call 970-482-5046. 970-482-5046.
Vice is written by a fellow named Jake Adelston, who is a Jewish reporter working in Tokyo and in Japan over a period of many years. It's a fascinating story by a very courageous reporter, and reporters are always looking for the big story. Well, this was a very big story that almost cost Jake his life, and certainly we know here in the United States there's something called the Mafia, but it doesn't bother us. We don't bother them. They don't bother us. And but, of course, here we have a fellow named John Gotti. Over there we have, there was a gentleman, Gatto. He was one of the chieftains of the comparable group in the Yamaguchi-Kubi group, like the Mafia here. Only there, everybody has only nine fingers and heavily tattooed, equally vicious, and the story starts out with Jake having a meeting with one of the Mafia chieftains and being told that if he proceeds to tell the story, why it will end his life and the life of his family. Well, I'm going to let him tell the story because he tells it beautifully, along with certainly a chronology of his experience in Japan and how you'd get a fellow from Brooklyn working there in a Japanese newspaper and certainly becoming one of the star reporters. Jake, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
And I'm glad you're still alive and well. I think it's an amazing, amazing story. But Sydney, you tell the story because I think you do it so well, and you're a very courageous fellow.
Well, thank you very much. I was a reporter in Japan for 12 years, working for the Yomiuri Shimbun, which is the kind of the equivalent of the Washington Post. It has a circulation of 10 million a day, which makes it the biggest newspaper in the world, actually. Though I'm afraid that 99% of the readers are Japanese. Doesn't give it a lot of reach. And I got that job by applying actually taking a test. And that's how Japanese newspapers hire in Japan. Everybody comes and takes a sort of kind of SAT-like examination. And I had about 5 years of Japanese study under my belt and did well enough to get the to pass the examination and be hired as a reporter to write in Japanese, along with all the other Japanese students who got hired that year. I think that's maybe my idiot savant quality. I picked up Japanese very well, and I like the language. It's a language that requires you to accept the Japanese worldview to learn to speak it properly. Meaning that, you know, whoever you're addressing has to be addressed in the polite style or the impolite style, depending upon what your positions are in society. So when you're speaking the language, you're automatically trying to decide whether the person you're speaking to is your equal, your superior, your inferior. It's not a very egalitarian society. I think Japanese don't see their relationships with each other as being equal. Are you still there?
Yes, sir. I'm very fascinated by hearing it, your description, because it's an entirely different culture. Everything is different there. Yeah. Certainly, everything is very orderly and organized, and there has to be in a very small island with so many people on it. But pick up the story.
Well, let's go back to what you just said. Yes, it is very orderly. Even organized crime is very orderly. One of the things that really surprised me when I started working as a reporter in 1993 was the Japanese mafia, of which there are about 22 major groups and 86,000 members, and that number has pretty much stayed the same for the last 16 years, that they're recognized organizations in Japan, meaning that they have offices and business cards, and that you can go buy a fan magazine or a comic book that will tell you about the lives of these Yakuza bosses and, you know, their histories. And that, you know, they're not hidden. They're pretty much out in the open. You could go to the National Police Agency, which is Japan's kind of version of the FBI, and look at their homepage, and it would tell you where the offices or the headquarters of each Yakuza group was located. You know, down to the street address or the apartment number. And it was kind of baffling being assigned to cover the Organized Crime Task Force because, you know, how can you know where all these people are and who they are and essentially what they do and not be able to close them down? It took me a long time to sort of figure out what the problem was.
What is the problem? I mean, obviously there's a symbiotic relationship. I mean, the police sort of play a game. They try to catch the bad guys. The bad guys have a code of honor that they respect, and you violate the code of honor, they kill you or torture you to death or kill your family. But, I mean, they're vicious people, and yet, of course, you had intimate contact with some of their leaders. In fact, in the end, they even ended up thanking you. I mean, that was the most amazing part of the story. But then I'm getting ahead of your story, so why don't you open the book with you're actually having a secret, a private meeting with one of the leaders of this Japanese mafia, and he gives you an offer that, like an offer you can't refuse.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't refuse the offer because I didn't have any cards to play. You know, it was year 2005. I was already had pretty much decided that I was going to leave Japan and try and do something new, because being a police beat reporter in Japan is very, very hard on your liver. It's hard on your family because it's a 24-hour shift every day with very little vacation time. And I've been doing it for like on and off for like 12 years. So I started looking at this one story that I wanted to be kind of my graduation piece, you know, like my final big scoop, which was about this gang boss named Goto Tadamasa. And Goto Tadamasa in Japan was one of the richest mafia members. I think his private equity is considered to be about $1 billion. Used to be the largest shareholder of Japan Airlines. You know, Japan sort of nationalized airline. Very powerful, very well connected. And I had this piece of information about him getting a liver transplant at UCLA.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Jake Adelstein, the big story, and believe me, it almost cost him his life.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of The Green Herb.
All of God's people have a ministry. and is a trick of our enemy to keep God's people sick and worn out to hinder their ability to minister. We are often judgmental toward people who are addicted to booze, cigarettes, and drugs, but we at the Green Herb have found that most of God's people are unknowingly addicted to the two most addictive products in America, sugar and soda pop. If you have a sickness or disease, or if you're just tired a lot, the Green Herb has an herbal product that is formulated just for you, and it's just $15.95. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB, that's 888-765-4372, or go to our website, www.thegreenherb.com, and be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
11 years ago, when my uncle started the Patriot Trading Group, gas was 75 cents a gallon. We were running an alleged budget surplus, and the total national debt was $5 trillion, and the government was forecasting the debt would be eliminated by 2010. And I thought my uncle was a wacko with tinfoil on his head. Well, I owned tech stock, certain to become a millionaire before the millennium rolled over. Since then, the debt has doubled, jobs are heading overseas, and 100,000 people have joined Eric with tinfoil on their heads. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President for the Patriot Trading Group, and as gold and silver have doubled and even tripled during the first 11 years, the issues facing this country over the next 11 years look far worse. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 800-951-0592. We offer all forms of gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, shipped and delivered at the most competitive prices in the country. Call us, 800-951-0592, or check out our website at allamericangold.com. And remember, you don't need to have tinfoil to own gold and silver.
Well, Dr. Stan, I guess it's morning, Jake Adelstein, and he's telling us about his big story, and basically what happened. It involves this chieftain of the mob in Japan, who medical school, and I mean, why would this man, a well-known criminal in Japan, be allowed to enter the United States, go to the top of the list in the United States for a liver transplant? I mean, you just, a lot of people die waiting to get a liver transplant, but not this gentleman. And how could he get into the United States? Everybody in Japan knew he was a criminal. And certainly the American authorities had to know he was a criminal. And so basically somebody tells Jake about this, one of the members of the mob who for one reason or another wants to feed the story to this American reporter. So Jake learns about the liver transplant, that the fellow has been given a visa to enter the United States. But you pick up the story from there.
All right. So, you know, at the time, I had no idea how this guy had gotten into the United States, but he's a known criminal. The New York Times has even written about him because his gang members had attacked a Japanese film director who'd made a film about the Yakuza, that's the Japanese mafia, that criticized them. So I thought I had a heck of a story, but I couldn't figure out what the trick was. I figured that he'd used a fake passport, or that he'd bribed someone in immigration. And so I called up UCLA, and I tried to get a hold of who I thought was the doctor. And, 3 days later, I got a call from someone within his organization who was a source of mine. And what they said to me was, you need to show up at this hotel in 3 hours and meet with Goto's people, or you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And I said, well, how much trouble? And the response was, well, you'll be dead by the weekend. And I said, well, you know what? I guess I will make that meeting. So I called up
an offer you can't refuse. You'll be either show up or you'll be dead by the weekend. So go ahead.
Yeah, they said it with such a matter of fact, nonchalance, kind of like going to a restaurant and them telling you, all we have left is the fish plate. That's it. So I called up a detective in Saitama who was kind of my mentor, and we went to this meeting at the Shinjuku Keio Plaza Hotel. Two of these guys from Gotogumi show up. They have their badges on because, of course, what is an organized crime group without a corporate emblem? And they made their case very, very clearly, which was that, you know, if I didn't erase the story, that they would see that I was erased and that they would, you know, erase my family as well. And here's where you come into the intricacies of the Japanese language. Japanese language doesn't require to use pronouns like I, you, he, she, or it in a sentence for the sentence to work. So they made a threat, but depending upon how you translated it or interpreted it, you know, it would be very unclear as to who would do what to whom. That's why they're such good extortionists, because they're very good at making threats that are hard to prove in court were actually a threat. I mean, that you have tone and the way things are said. But literally, you know, the threat was very, very vague. Like, you know, there is this story that if it is not erased, something else will be erased. It might be a family, not necessarily your family, but a family. That's how the Yakuza work. And I dropped the story because I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea how the guy got in the United States, and I didn't want to reveal that I didn't know everything I should, because then I thought they would really snuff me out.
And basically, first, all you knew was that the fellow had got to the United States, that he had a liver transplant, he had serious liver problems, he was jaundiced, he had hepatitis C, and he'd come back with a new liver, he was healthy, but he was very disturbed. You were looking into the story, but they didn't understand. You didn't have much of a story at the time. You had a couple of facts, but you had really uncovered very little. But what was most significant was, you know, when you talked to the detective afterwards, he said, you know, obviously, you know, they think that you know a lot more about this story than you really do. I mean, this was the thing. You really didn't have a story to write, but they didn't know that.
Yeah, that was fortunate. And it was, you know, years later that I pieced together that actually he had made a deal with the FBI, and the FBI had granted him a visa to go to the United States. In exchange, he had given the FBI a wealth of data. Well, you know, not all the data that he promised them, but a certain amount of data about organized crime operations in the United States. And in exchange, they gave him a visa so he could go to the United States. And for me, the critical piece of evidence came when there was a leak of confidential police files onto the internet, when a detective was accidentally uploading his files as he was downloading pornography in 2007. And that's when I knew what had really happened. And from there, I discovered that not only Goro Tadamasa, but three other Yakuza members had also gotten liver transplants at UCLA. Which was kind of mind-boggling, because generally speaking, you don't imagine, you know, diseased thugs from overseas sort of jumping to the head of the liver transplant line.
Well, apparently there were large donations given to UCLA through some outlet there in Las Vegas, a gambling outlet. It wasn't that for sure. Of course, everybody at UCLA denies there was any hanky-panky, but it's pretty obvious from them. What was the, was it $100,000 or $1 million?
I think it was Goto, after his surgery, donated $100,000.
Right.
And then I think it was Mio Satoshi, who was the head of another organized crime group within the Yamaguchi-gumi, donated $100,000. I think that, you know, and they all claimed that that was, you know, post-surgery and as a gesture of a thanks on the parts of the organized crime members, and in a way, you know, was UCLA giving them priority based on those cash donations. Personally, you know, as an federal law, and having written about a case of Yakuza money laundering in the United States, these payments made to UCLA by these four gangsters, each one of them would probably be money laundering if someone would actually look at it. Money laundering in the United States is, here's how it's defined. Criminal proceeds, profits made from criminal enterprises overseas, once they are transported to the United States, that is money laundering. That's all you have to do, is have a criminal operation that makes a profit and transfer those profits to the United States in some shape or form, and you have done money laundering. all four of these gangsters, Takeshita Saburo, Ogino Yoshiro, Goro Taramasa, Mio Hisatoshi, they're all gang bosses. I mean, their sole source of revenue is essentially illegal enterprise. And they paid UCLA at least $500,000 apiece for the operation. That's the standard cost. Well, that money, since it's money made from criminal enterprises, or the majority of it is probably made from criminal enterprises, at the point that money is accepted, transferred to UCLA, that's money laundering. And then the question comes, does UCLA know that they were dealing with Yakuza? Did they know they were taking money that was made from illegal operations overseas? And it would require Japanese police cooperation to prove it, but I think it could be done.
I'm sure it could be, but, Chris, that wasn't your purpose. You wanted, of course, to get to the bottom of how this all worked, and, of course, the fact that here is this chieftain, this mafia, Japanese mafia chieftain, who's actually turned over information to the FBI. And, of course, these people live by a code. I mean, everything is, they almost have a sense of honor within this vast mafia, this 86,000-member mafia in Japan, and the idea that a mafia chieftain or the Japanese would turn information on his organization over to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which would certainly share it with the Japanese authorities. He had violated the code, and he was frightened to death that you were going to find out and release the information. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Yeah, that would be an extremely fair appraisal. And, of course, you know, it's unacceptable to rat to the cops to sell out to your peers. And this is the reason that he probably wanted me dead. After that, the story of his liver transplant and the deal made with the FBI and UCLA, I ended up writing in the Washington Post in May of 2008 because no Japanese publication would let me write it. Everyone was so terrified of the guy. And eventually that resulted in him being kicked out of the Yamaguchi-gumi and losing power, which made my life much better because it's made it much harder for him to harass me. Without an organization behind him, he's just a very cranky old man with a bad liver. So he certainly didn't take very good care of the liver they gave him.
Well, of course, the interesting thing was that here was a man who killed at least 17 people. The Japanese had tried to
The police believe that he was involved in at least 17 murders. The police
and
believe
the Japanese
that.
Had put him on trial, and everybody was afraid to testify. I'm sure the jury was afraid to convict him, and he actually got off on that charge, didn't he?
Yeah, they wanted to pin a murder on him, the murder of a negotiator in a real estate deal named Nozaki. They were unable to get enough evidence to try him for murder, so they tried to take him down on a separate charge of real estate fraud. And the main witness for the prosecution was so intimidated that he wouldn't take the stand. Case fell apart. He got a not guilty verdict.
And so now he's not guilty. This is before, of course, you got your article published in the Washington Post and in the Los Angeles Times. And so he is planning on killing you. And he's having you watched. And why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, there are certain. I can't go over all the details because I would be endangering some sources. But by March 6th of 2008, I was under police protection in Japan. My family was under police protection back in the United States, and the Japanese police were telling me that if I wanted to neutralize this guy, I had to write up the story of what he had done, the deal he had made with the FBI. And it was kind of scary because, I thought it would be such a simple thing to do, but no one in Japan wanted to write this story. And when I tried to take it to some American publications, everyone treated me like I was insane because no one would believe, you know, that you would have the FBI making a deal with a gangster like this.
But you actually had information on the record from the head of the FBI office. Anyway, the fellow had actually made the deal. Who, you know, he had to decide whether he was going to help this gangster and get the information, or not help him and not get the information. And you feel the FBI made the right choice in this under the circumstances?
I think so. The FBI, you know, the execution of it was poor. They didn't get all the information first, which is what they probably should have done. They did get a substantial amount of it. And you have to understand the FBI's motivations in this were reasonable. You know, Japan has 86,000 Yakuza. They have a lot of money flowing into the United States. At the same time, the FBI cannot monitor their activity in the United States because their counterparts in Japan, the National Police Agency, will not share the names and dates of birth of the Yakuza they have on file because of privacy concerns. So after you know years and years of butting heads with the Japanese government, the FBI decided that if they were going to keep the Japanese mafia out of Japan, they would have to get the information themselves. And so when Goto approached them and proffered a deal, they took it. If I had been in the FBI's shoes, I would have done the same thing. If you can't get the information from the good guys because they seem to be protecting their local Yakuza, why not get it from the bad guys?
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with Jake Adelson. I mean, this is an incredible, incredible story. We'll be back in just a moment here at the American Business Network.
Avery Enterprises, your choice for highly technical writing. Avery Enterprises reminds all drivers the holiday season is a time of joy and celebration with family and friends. It's also a time when drunk drivers hit the road. The choice is yours. Arrive alive. Never drink and drive. Sponsored by Avery Enterprises. Learn more. Visit AveryEnterprises.net. That's AveryEnterprises.net. When it's too technical for a tech writer to do, contact Avery Enterprises, your home for highly technical writing. They thank you for driving responsibly. Have a wedding, New Year's party, business conference, seminar, or holiday event coming up and can't seem to find that place that brings affordability and excellence together? Look no further. Celebrate the season with the redesigned Sable Landing Event Center, now open for your special occasions. Easily accessible and conveniently located 1.5 miles east of I-25 off Highway 119 at the Longmont Firestone exit. Sable Landing will delight your senses and impress your guests with stunning holiday lights, a peaceful garden courtyard, and beautifully lit fountain. Attention to detail and outstanding service is yours. Don't wait. It's peak season, so reserve your place now. Call for your private showing and ask how KHNC listeners can save hundreds on booking your wedding and special event now. 303-651-6427. That's affordable excellence at Sable Landing Event Center. That's 303-651-6427. Keen Research and Development of 1309 Alexandria Street in Lafayette reminds us that nothing ruins a holiday celebration like a friend or a loved one who gets into an accident after a party. During this special time of year, let's make an early resolution not to let a loved one drive if they've had a bit too much of those holiday spirits. That's from Barry and his family and staff at Keen Research and Development, where they're always working to make our area a safer place to live, work, and raise a family. That's your friends at Keen Research and Development, 1309 Alexandria Street in Lafayette. If you've had your hand on the bottle, keep your foot off the throttle and have a safe and happy holiday season.
This is George Flynn of Words of Freedom. iMoneyCoach.com's financial experts understand the forces that have brought our economy to where it is today and the difficult times ahead. For under $200, the online financial courses at iMoneyCoach.com will give you the power, insight, and tools you need to successfully navigate the coming financial storm. Gain thousands of dollars of training materials and videos in this 10-course program for under $200. Check out iMoneyCoach.com. That's iMoneyCoach.com.
Whether you're in automotive, sporting goods, hardware, health, electrical, electronics, construction, carpet cleaning, legal, or animal care, and offer exceptional customer service and provide quality services or goods, you're honest, reliable, and professional. If you have a business, we have the customers. Let us put you in touch with our loyal, supportive, and dedicated listeners today. They're waiting to hear from you. It's inexpensive. It's effective. Call KHNC at 1-800-205-6245.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this morning is Jake Adelstein. Jake, do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out for our listeners?
Oh, yeah. There's the book Tokyo Vice, and then there's the website is it's japansubculture.com. I guess the three W's everybody knows. www.japansubculture.com.
Okay, fine. And so when American people get copies of your book, Tokyo Vice?
Tokyo Vice is at most major bookstores or on Amazon. I have to warn your listeners that there's some very graphic, bloody, and disturbing things in there, because it's also partly about the human trafficking industry in Japan, as well as serial killers and some very unpleasant things. I mean, Japan is mostly a safe country, but when you're a reporter covering the crime beat, you get to see the worst part of it.
Well, you know, as I read your book, it's very obvious the Japanese police want to take down Gatto, and comparable to John Gotti here, but I think it's a similarity in language, you know, in the names is fascinating. Makes it easier for me to remember them anyway. But the Japanese police want to take him down, but they can't do it. They have laws there, and they've tried to get him on one or another cause. I mean, he's a mob, he's chieftain, he's responsible for all these murders, and they can't touch him. It seems he's above the law. And the FBI
would like to take him down,
but they can't do it. They can't come out and make a public statement. So in many respects, you were sort of used by this whole thing, and everybody's pleading with you to write the story. But you know very well, if you write this story, they're going to kill you, or at least they're going to. They've made threats that they will kill you. So you're sort of caught in the middle of this whole thing.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone had their interests. You know, you have Gotō Gumi wanting to protect his interests and his organization. You have, the Yamaguchi Gumi is an organization of 40,000 people and 100 different factions. And there were certainly people in that organization that wanted his territory and his money and his power. The cops didn't like him because they were unable to, get him on any charges, kind of like, you know, John Gotti, the Teflon Don, in a sense. So I did feel at times that I was the pawn in all of this and not the player. But, you know, I was able to make some moves on my own that I think let me come out on top. Obviously, you know, I'm not dead. He's no longer a crime boss and is now supposedly a Buddhist priest repenting his evil ways. So there's a happy ending to some part of the story. If UCLA was properly investigated, I would feel that justice had been done, because my gut feeling is that there was something very wrong about what happened with these other, with this guy and these other three Yakuza getting liver transplants there ahead of more deserving Americans. UCLA says they don't make moral judgments about their patients. They only look at their health. But somehow I feel that, you have to look at the lifestyle choices of the people that you're giving these livers to, and whether they're, in a sense, deserving of them, or are shown that they're capable of taking good care of them.
Well, I think the big thing is, of course, that, I mean, there are a lot of Americans on the list to get a liver transplant at UCLA who died waiting to get, whereas the Japanese crime leaders could come to UCLA and almost immediately go to the head of the list and get their livers. And don't tell me that was just by accident. I mean, you have to be very, very specific. You have to do a lot of medical analysis. You have to have very, very similar genetic makeup for the liver not to be rejected. And so the reason these things work is they're very, very careful, they're selective in who they give the liver to. But they had to jump these over a lot of good Americans to give the livers to the Japanese crime figures, who then rewarded the UCLA with large gifts of money. And don't tell me that Of course, UCLA is going to deny this. Oh, my goodness, we wouldn't do anything for money. It's all fairness. We don't make moral judgments. But I think that you, in your heart of hearts, don't believe that, do you?
You know, I mean, here is as a reporter, you know, I don't have proof. You know, as an individual citizen, you know, I believe that my suspicion is that it wasn't kosher, that there was something very odd about the entire transaction. But thinking that and suspecting that and proving it are different things.
Sure.
UCLA has a very good legal department as well. So I do think that on the surface that the money that was given to them is illegal proceeds, and therefore, you know, it's money that's been laundered in the United States. The question is, how do you recover that money? By ripping the organs out of the Yakuza and giving them to somebody else? Because that's where the money disappeared.
Sure, well, all you've done in the book is raise the question on that part of the story. But the rest of the story, I think, was fascinated in the fact that the FBI was willing to tell you on the record, so that you could actually quote them and quote the individual, that they had given the visa to, and why they'd given the visa to Gatto. Because I think that way down in their heart of hearts, they wanted you to write this story, because it was the only way to bring him down, because he had violated the code, the Japanese code. And once the leaders of the rest of the mafia realized that this billionaire had violated the code of honor, which is so important to these people, why, of course, that he would be brought down. Don't you think that was the FBI motivation in telling you the story?
I think definitely that people in the FBI felt that they had been ripped off by Gatto, that they had made a deal in good faith, and that he had not delivered all the goods that he had promised. And I think that they wanted to see him down as well. I mean, this guy has made a ton of enemies, enemies within his own organization, enemies of people who are close to him, enemies of the FBI, enemies of the Japanese police. When you're dealing with a sociopath, you want to utilize all of his enemies and bring them onto your side. You know what they say, the friend of my enemy is my friend. And in this sense, the FBI was his enemy, because he didn't give them what he'd promised. And I think that they cooperated with me, and also felt that they needed to justify making the deal in the first place. I feel the FBI, you know, acted responsibly in giving him a visa for the information that they gave him. Reasonable, you know. Sometimes to get human intelligence, you have to make deals with bad people.
And I think we have somebody on the line calling in. Is somebody calling in with?
Yeah, good morning, Dr. Stan. This is Mark here in Iowa. I do have a brief question on the subject that you're pretty still close to, and that was the concept that when this fellow comes into the States to get his organ transplant, that he is perhaps displacing others who might be higher on the list. I think we're on the break, so I'll finish it when we get back, if that's okay.
All right, fine. Okay. Hang on there, Jake. We'll be back in just a moment here at the American Freedom Network.
Lindy's Home Service and Lindy's Note Connection reminds all drivers the holiday season is a time of joy and celebration with family and friends. The choice is yours. Arrive alive. Never drink and drive. Sponsored by Lindy's Home Service and Lindy's Note Connection, members of the Northern Colorado Better Business Bureau, working for a better community. Visit lindynotes.com. That's lindynotes.com. Lindy's thanks and salutes our veterans this holiday season. That's lindynotes.com.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
Have a wedding, New Year's party, business conference, seminar, or holiday event coming up and can't seem to find that place that brings affordability and excellence together? Look no further. Celebrate the season with the redesigned Sable Landing Event Center, now open for your special occasions. Easily accessible and conveniently located 1.5 miles east of I-25 off Highway 119 at the Longmont Firestone exit. Sable Landing will delight your senses and impress your guests with stunning holiday lights, a peaceful garden courtyard, and beautifully lit fountain. Attention to detail and outstanding service is yours. Don't wait. It's peak season, so reserve your place now. Call for your private showing and ask how KHNC listeners can save hundreds on booking your wedding and special event now. 303-651-6427. That's affordable excellence at Sable Landing Event Center. That's 303-651-6427.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, we have caller. What was your question? You said they, you're absolutely right. They were displacing Americans at the top. We've been waiting a couple of years, and the Japanese mafia chieftains could come in and go right to the head of the list. But go ahead with your question.
Well, that's a pretty good setup, Dr. Stan, because sometimes people wait for quite a while for a donor to show up with a matching organ type. And it seems to me that we're talking about a class of people that, unlike the average American, not only have money that comes from ill-gotten gains, but might even have organs that mysteriously appear at just the right time. And if that's true, then officials are looking in the opposite direction with that as well. And I'm curious to hear what your guests might have to say about such a concern.
You know, I have an interesting story from someone who was working in the organization. It's an anecdote, and I've never known what it meant. There was another crime boss who was with Goto Tadamasa after the operation, and he was congratulating Goto on, how lucky he was that the perfect donor would show up, would die in a traffic accident, like, you know, six or seven weeks after he arrived in the United States to get his liver transplant. And Goto's response to that was, oh, that was no accident. And he laughed. And I've always thought, no one can be that lucky. I mean, he arrived in the United States around, I think, July 7th, 2001. And then, less than 2 months go by and the perfect donor shows up. He gets a liver. He goes home. All within like the 90 days that his visa allowed him to be within Japan. That just seems too good to be true.
So I think your observation is very, very astute. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
No, that pretty well tears it. I mean, it sounds like we're talking about the same old thing, that when it comes
talking
to corruption and money, they go
thing.
Together.
And
thanks a lot.
These people wouldn't think twice about killing you or me or anyone else?
No, I mean, they would think twice about killing a Japanese citizen because it brings down a lot of heat. But someone outside of Japan, I don't think it would give them any serious qualms.
Well, and it's an interesting point, too, simply because now that they're here, enough questions have already been raised. What's another murder?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to spend, and I've been told that he spent $3 million. I'm not exactly sure where all that money went to acquire that liver. Are you going to wait for a donor to show up when you can buy one?
Thank you very much. Like I said, it just goes to show you that certain things seem to never change.
Amen.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thanks so much. But, one of the interesting things, as your book progresses, basically after this is all over, Gato has been exposed. He's been suddenly forced out of his key position in this criminal activity. And then you get a call from one of the leaders of this whole the Japanese mafia thanking you for your good work. I mean, wasn't that quite a surprise?
I knew the guy. I mean, before I wrote the Washington Post story, there were a couple things that I did. One is that one of my better sources on the story was his mistress, and I moved her out of the country. You know, it is possible to help someone get a new identity, even if you're not in the FBI. You just have to know how to do it. And the other thing I did is I went to a rival faction in the Yamaguchi-gumi, and I showed them the Washington Post article, and I translated it in Japanese so they could make sense of it, and I asked them for a comment, the comment being, you know, did you know that this boss, who's one of your top-level executives, made this deal with the FBI? I would really like your input on that. Was he given permission? Did everybody know that he was doing it? Were you guys okay with it? And, of course, my purpose in doing that was, you know, basically to say, hey, you know, we have a common enemy, you and I, right? This guy is, you know, not just bothering me, but he's a nuisance to your group as well. And when I got the phone call, and I recognized the voice of the Yakuza who called me because I'd seen him on a video before, I realized that, yes, you know, in some senses we've been working on this together to get rid of him. You know, more than surprised, I was kind of honored, because within that organization, this particular Yakuza is, you know, a lesser evil, a nicer guy than most of them.
And some of these chieftains, these criminal chieftains, were very cultured and intelligent people, and very, you know, well-mannered towards you, and yet, of course, they were part of a group that wouldn't think about killing you tomorrow, and yet they could beat with you and be very gracious and give you green tea and sit down and go through all the social amenities. I mean, it sounds just like a make-believe world.
You know, there's one Yakuza boss in Kabukicho who runs a part of that red light district, who is not only a Buddhist priest but also a published author, who is a very good writer, and I've had some very good conversations with this fellow. You know, but at the same time, his principal income is coming from blackmail and extortion. You know, he sees himself as an instrument of karma. I mean, you know, he's only blackmailing people who've done bad things, and thus he's making them, you know, work off their bad karma. And that's how he explains it. It's a very twisted philosophical argument. You know, a lot of these guys who are in organized crime are quite intelligent. They're not like no-neck thugs, which is always surprising.
Well, what are you doing now? Are you going to get a job over here working once you get through doing your book tour?
Well, right now, I am doing some consulting work for a U.S. company with an office in Japan that pays most of the bills, and then I am writing. I'm writing a second book, and the first book has sold well enough that I may actually have some money coming in from it, which is amazing in this industry, with you know, publishing houses collapsing right and left. Second book is about the Yakuza boss, ex-Yakuza boss who became my bodyguard, and his life, which is very interesting because it traces relationships between Japan and America and the changing face of the Yakuza.
We'll have to look forward to that one. Got to let you go. Thanks for being with us. Our guest, Jake Adelstein, the book, Tokyo Vice. Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Dirt, Grain, and Seed says that the upcoming holiday season is meant to be a time of joy and happiness. However, when tragedy occurs, it can be the saddest of time. Do yourself and your community a favor and remember to drive defensively, cautiously, and soberly. Make this holiday season a safe and special time of year. That's from Clean Dirt, Grain, and Seeds at 6530 Road 28.5 in Sterling. They're proud to be a sponsor of our holiday safe driving campaign and are on the air because they care, and wish you all happy and safe holiday season. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Got a home project in mind but no idea what kind of tools and equipment you'll need? No worry. Grand Rental Station has knowledgeable, friendly consultants to walk you through the process. The Grand Rental staff of experts will guide you through selecting the right equipment, teaching you how to use it safely and correctly, and suggestions on how to achieve professional results. Give the staff of professionals a call today in Loveland. 970-669-3866. That's 970-669-3866. Rent the equipment. Keep the advice. Grand Rental Station. Don't forget to tell them the KHNC sent you, and you appreciate their support of this station. 970-669-3866. Celebrate a free Festival of Lights night with friends and family at the newly redesigned Sable Landing Event Center Sunday, December the 6th at 5 p.m. Enjoy cookies, hot chocolate, exciting stories, and special music as you stroll through the Winter Wonderland Garden Courtyard. Sable Landing's located 1.5 miles east of I-25 and the Longmont Firestone exit, 5961 Sable Avenue. Call 303-651-6427. Come and enjoy the free Festival of Lights nights. That's 303-651-6427.
Well, Dr. Stan here. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Jake Adelstein. It was a fascinating book to read. And of course, we have a mafia here in the United States. What's really so interesting about that is, of course, that J. Edgar Hoover covered this up for many years. Why did J. Edgar Hoover, the great, of course, anti-communist leader of the FBI, cover up the mafia? Because he is deeply involved with the occult, 33rd degree Mason. He was a homosexual. But this is the story you will never get. And of course, the only reason that J. Edgar Hoover went after the mafia was because the Kennedys forced him into it. They insisted that he investigate them, and of course, they both paid with their lives for that indiscretion, but J. Edgar Hoover was forced to go after his friends in the mafia. So nothing as it appears to be, because working behind the scenes, there are powerful secret societies. And the mafia is a secret society, and it came out of the same origin, of course, as the Illuminati and the Masonry. The Masons, they all, of course, are getting towards the same goal. The One World Order. A criminal syndicate, the mafia aren't as acceptable as the Masons are. Most Masons have no idea what Masonry is all about any more than most members of the Illuminati really understood what it's about, any more than most members of the Council on Foreign Relations or many members of the Bilderbergers and Trilateral Commission. They don't understand what it's all about. But if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it, you need to read it, or if you can't afford to, go up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can watch my two-hour talk from which the Brotherhood of Darkness book actually came from. So you need to watch the movie or get the book. You need to hear my talk on the Forbidden Secret, my talk on the Financial Armageddon, to tell you who Barack Obama really is. That's Brotherhood of Darkness, Forbidden Secret, the Financial Armageddon. And of course, we have my talk on the World Revolution. You'll see my interview with Ambassador Smith, American ambassador to Cuba, a billionaire, who has very graciously allowed me to interview him in 1980, and he will tell you the State Department knew Fidel Castro was a communist and brought him to power. The CIA knew Fidel Castro was a communist, and that's why they brought him to power, just like, of course, our State Department knew that Mugabe in Rhodesia was a communist, and we brought him to power, and they knew Nelson Mandela was a communist, and they brought him to power in South Africa, and the communists control South Africa today, and they knew that the leader of Southwest Africa was a communist, and the leaders of Angola were communist, and of course they brought them to power. And you have to ask yourself, why would they do that? Well, for the same reason we're doing everything we can to build up communist China today and transferring our wealth there and giving General Motors $50 billion so that they can expand their plants in communist China. Why are these things happening? You need to get my pamphlet, The Communist Capitalist Alliance, and then understand what's really going on behind the scenes. My number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Until tomorrow, Lord be with you.
Now you can reach the American Freedom Network at our new P.O. Box, 1750 Johnstown, Colorado, 80534, or online at AmeriFree.com. The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsors' fine products or by calling 1-800-205-